Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films No Sudden Move, Scales, and Summer of Soul. It's all very alliterative. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Also okay.
I'm very glad to hear that. Okay. Well, let's move to these movies here. And let us start, with No Sudden Move. Now, this is a film which is now, it's another, it's by Steven Soderbergh, who, of course, burst onto the scene back in the late 80s with Sex, Lies, and Videotape, and has gone on since then to make a jillion other movies, some of them really, really good, some of them not so good. And then some years ago, he retired from filmmaking, and then he has done exactly the same thing that Ingmar Bergman did when he retired from filmmaking, which is to go right ahead making movies, except making them for television. So No Sudden Move is streaming on television, and but it's a real movie, and I think it's Steven Soderbergh's best movie in quite a long while. It's really just really, really good. So here's what it is. It's a crime movie. It's a caper movie in a way, and it starts off with this situation that we've seen in a lot of other films, noir and movies and stuff over the years. We have somebody assembling a small crew of criminals to pull off what appears to be a very, very simple job. The guy who is putting these guys together says, all you have to do is, as he puts it, babysit for this guy's family. What that really means is hold the guy's family in their house for a while this guy is forced to do a certain job that a mob boss needs him to do. So, of these guys who are brought together, the most important ones are played by Don Cheadle and Benicio del Toro, two really, really excellent actors, and they are just at their best in this movie. And the guy whose family is being quote-unquote babysat for is played by David Harbour. And along the way, as the movie proceeds, we meet lots of other characters of different kinds, some of them good, some of them bad, all of them pretty much just excellently acted. There are also some women in the story, Julia Fox, Amy Simetz, Lucy Holt, and then other people show up as the movie proceeds. We have a Kieran Culkin, who is really good. John Hamm has a small role, but he really stands out in it. Near the end of the movie, to my surprise, Matt Damon shows up in a very important role. But that's, again, that's near the end. So the point is, it's a really marvelously cast movie, and it's a really, really excellently acted movie. So as the story proceeds, it's one of these stories with all kinds of twists. And this happens, and that happens, and another thing happens. But it's not a story which is very peripatetic. It does not move all over the place. There's a number of different locations, of course, but there's an almost sort of a concentrated or intense feel to it as these characters get into various kinds of conflicts. And yes, gunfire and death does erupt from time to time, but it's not handled in all that brutal or graphic a fashion. And it's the whole movie, even though it's about crime and about violence and stuff like that, it's a likable movie. But above all, and I'm going to say this yet again now, it is just such a well-acted movie. I had such fun just watching the performers in this movie and seeing who turned up next and just exactly what they were doing. Now, there's one other thing I want to mention, which is that Steven Soderbergh is always his own cinematographer. This is very unusual. There are, of course, major movie directors who have been cinematographers over the years, who started as cinematographers. But Steven Soderbergh is a rare case of a modern-day filmmaker who does his own cinematography under a pseudonym. Peter Andrews. You'll see this in a lot of his movies. So there it is. And the cinematography in this movie is really interesting. It's a widescreen movie, not surprisingly, because almost all films are in this day and age. But he uses these sort of wide-angle lenses that give this odd sort of cast to the images and give large parts of the movie a really sort of an eerie feel. We see a lot of indoor spaces in these very sort of panoramic views, sometimes with a lot of empty space in between, which has a kind of a psychological value, which is kind of interesting. I just want to mention this. It's not something that most people will notice a lot, but it's interesting cinematography, slightly offbeat, never interferes with one's appreciation, simply have a good suspenseful story, but it's another feature that the movie has. So, hey, offbeat camera work, a sensational cast, an interesting twisty kind of story, no sudden move is a real good movie. It's a fun movie. It's a summer movie. And I think a lot of people are going to have a good time with it, really enjoy it. Now, as Monty Python used to say, for something completely different, the movie Scales, which is made by a director named Shahad Amin. And it comes from a very, very distant part of the world from which very few movies get to come to the United States. Its origins are Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and Iraq. So again, you know, three very, very important countries, of course, but we don't see many movies from those places that get, you know, onto the American circuit, but Scales is such a movie. And I said before, it was directed by Shahad Amin, also written and directed by Shahad Amin, a very, very interesting new auteur, a new movie creator, who I think probably has a pretty bright future, and it's a very interesting movie. It's not all that long. The Steven Soderbergh movie, No Sudden Move, is almost 2 hours, but Scales is more like an hour and a quarter. It's very, very concentrated, and it has a dark story, but I found it a very engrossing kind of a story. So it was shot in the country of Oman, right along the shoreline, which is apparently very rugged and very, very not a very inviting place. And it takes place in a fishing village. And in this fishing village, there are mysterious monsters that come out of the ocean from time to time and menace the population and do damage in the population. So we have this and by the way, obviously, this movie is sort of a horror movie. It's a supernatural movie. But we do have these creatures that come out, and they're sort of like mermaids in a way, but like bad, menacing mermaids. Now, I'm not sure if we're supposed to say mermaids anymore nowadays that we, you know, that we use they instead of he or she. But, I can't think of a better term, so I'm just going to say mermaids. But again, they're not the nice mermaids like the Disney Little Mermaid. They're monstrous mermaids. And so in order to keep these creatures somehow at bay, the people of this village have hit upon the custom, and maybe it works, of every year sacrificing a baby girl. And then presumably these monsters will no longer at least attack the community. So what happens at the beginning of the movie is we have our main character, who is just a little girl, a baby named Hayat, and she is being sacrificed, but her father impulsively leaps in and saves her. So Hayat is saved. She's going to get to grow up and be an adult person eventually. But the family is now in disgrace because the father did this, and the family is not liked, and the family is sort of ostracized. So the bulk of the movie takes place many years later when Hayat is now a teenager, and the family is still kind of, you know, outside the main life of the community. Nobody likes them. People don't like Hayat. There's all this stuff going on, and Hayat is really hoping, now that her mother is pregnant again, that the new kid is going to be a girl, so that the new little baby will be sacrificed, and Hayat can continue, who is now a teenager, can continue to live her life. But what happens is a boy is born, and the movie goes on from there. She is still in danger from her own fellow persons, and she is also, of course, like everybody, in danger from these creatures. And so she decides she's going to see if she can do something about these horrible monsters and thereby perhaps redeem her family's honorable place within the community. In the meanwhile, through all of that, something strange is happening to her body, and it involves the title thing of the movie, Scales, and maybe she is changing into one of these mermaid creatures herself. That could be the case, although we certainly don't know that for sure. Now, I've told all this plot stuff here, and I don't think I've given spoilers, but this is not really a movie about plot. It's really a movie about atmosphere, about mood, about the sort of dark, superstitious atmosphere that just envelops everything. And that's really what the movie is about. It has a beautiful black and white cinematography of this very rugged, rough kind of community, where they live, how they live, and all of that. And that's really what the movie is about. You get to kind of immerse yourself into this way of life and into this kind of atmosphere of that most of us will never come anywhere near. We don't live in fishing villages on the coast of Oman. And it's just really fascinating to be enveloped in this. And that's really what the movie is all about. So again, it's really a movie that's about visual experience, about mood, about atmosphere, much more than plot. And the mood and the atmosphere are very often dark. But it's also suspenseful, and it's wonderfully acted by these terrific people. I'll just mention the name of the teenager who plays the teenage Hayat. Her name is Basima Hajar, and she is just wonderful. And everybody in the movie seems really, really authentic and just first rate. This is the first feature to be made by this writer-director, who is apparently 31 years old, and I think has a terrific future. And I just hope more movies from that part of the world keep getting to the United States, and I hope we get to see future work by this tremendously talented writer-director. And now for our final movie, and once again, now for something completely different, Summer of Soul. And I'm going to give the full title now, or rather the title and the subtitle, because it's long. Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. And that makes a certain amount of sense, although it overstates the case. Summer of Soul is a documentary, and it's about a music festival called the Harlem Cultural Festival that took place way back in 1969. Now, most people have never heard of the Harlem Cultural Festival, and there are two reasons for that. One, it was an entirely black experience. It was promoted by black people. The stars of this, it's a rock festival, a pop festival, a soul festival. The stars of this music festival were almost entirely black people. And so right away there, you know, this took place in 1969. Racism in America and the just sort of overlooking of important black culture was much more prominent then than it is now. So that's one reason why this never got much fame. But the other, maybe bigger reason, is that this was also the year of Woodstock. And Woodstock, of course, which I was at, by the way, I never tire of reminding people of that. I was there at Woodstock, not at the Summer of Soul, the Harlem Cultural Festival. But Woodstock, of course, got all the publicity, was written about, talked about everywhere, and the following year, a very, very major long movie was made about Woodstock. So for a long time now, people have been able to sort of experience Woodstock vicariously by seeing the movie called Woodstock, which is, again, it's a very long and elaborately made movie with all kinds of terrific camera people who prowled around the festival, got all kinds of sensational footage. Summer of Soul is just totally unknown. That is the Harlem Cultural Festival, totally unknown compared with that. And it's still going to be totally unknown compared with that, but it's going to get a lot more publicity now that we have this documentary out. Now, the reason that the documentary is called, is subtitled, Or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised, is that even though lots and lots and lots of footage of this concert, this festival, was shot, supervised by a TV director named Hal Tulchin, who wanted to get the whole thing out there in the public and movies and TV and all of that, he just was never able to really get this into the public eye. Some of the footage was shown on an independent TV channel in New York City where the festival took place, but by and large, the whole thing was just considered to be too black and people didn't look at it and Woodstock got all the publicity. So the footage was stashed away. And now the very famous person known as Questlove, and he directed Summer of Soul under his full name, Amir Thompson, but he's best known as Questlove, and Questlove is best known as the drummer of the hip-hop group called The Roots. And since 2014, they've been appearing on Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show. So Questlove knew about this stuff, found out about this stuff, and decided this stuff has got to get out there, and that is where this movie that I'm talking about now came from, Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. Very little of this footage actually found its way onto television. Now, a bunch of that footage has made its way into this documentary. Interestingly, the documentary still has not been fully the festival has still not been fully documented because Summer of Soul runs a little under 2 hours and it contains only a small amount of the hours and hours of footage that were shot back when the festival actually took place. And Summer of Soul is not just a concert film. A lot of it is people in the audience talking to the cameras. It's people who put on the festival or participated in the festival talking about what it was like. So out of this 2-hour movie, we have most of it is concert footage, but a lot of it is other kinds kinds of footage. So we still are only seeing a small fraction of all the material that was shot when this festival actually took place in a park in Harlem in New York City. That said, it's a marvelous festival. And who are some of the people in it? Gladys Knight and the Pips, B.B. King, the fabulous Nina Simone, Stevie Wonder, Abby Lincoln, Mahalia Jackson, The Fifth Dimension, who talked fascinatingly about how their music was not considered black enough, and that's one of the reasons they were very eager to participate in this very black festival. So anyway, those are just a handful of the people who were involved in this movie. Again, I wish there were more concert footage, maybe a little bit less of people in the audience talking about, oh, how wonderful it all was. That's sort of predictable. But it's an interesting documentary. A lot of times it's a very rock and rollin' documentary, and I had a good time looking at it, and I'm just glad it's out there. Summer of Soul is both being released to theaters and being streamed, so you can see it on a large screen or a small screen, your choice. And I think it's just a fascinating documentary. And again, it's a real summer movie. And I think a lot of people are going to have a lot of fun with Summer of Soul. So that is my pretty darn jumping all over the place story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films No Sudden Move, Scales, and Summer of Soul.